This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. To understand the inner workings of any government, you often need to shine a light into the records meetings where government actually happens. That's what Missouri's Sunshine Law is supposed to do. It provides citizens the right to make a request for public records, which doesn't cover everything, but there is a lot the law considers public. Now, unlike real sunshine, though, traveling at the speed of light, Missouri's Sunshine Law is often very slow. Our reporters regularly wait months for their request to be fulfilled, and for two legal activists, the fight for open records has now crossed the decade mark. They are now asking a judge to find a Missouri prosecutor in contempt of court. And to talk with me about this case and the 10-year campaign to shed light on the operations of the state's drug task forces, I'm joined by Dave Roland. He's the director of litigation for the Missouri Freedom Center. Dave, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And also with me is Aaron Malin. He is a legal consultant at Pedroli Law. Aaron, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going to dive into the case in just a little bit. But Dave, before we do that, can you give us a bit of an attorney primer? What is Missouri Sunshine Law and why is it necessary?
Sure. Missouri Sunshine Law was adopted about 50 years ago in an effort to make sure that citizens would have access to public records and public meetings so that they could play their proper role in our self-governing society. The law was designed to guarantee a very broad range of access. The government is allowed to close certain records and meetings, but only if they meet certain statutory exemptions. They added penalties back in the 1980s that were supposed to put some teeth into the enforcement of the Sunshine Law. But unfortunately, over the years, many government officials still are very hesitant, or at least very slow, to fulfill Sunshine Law requests. And ultimately, they're kind of gambling with taxpayer money that the citizens who are denied, improperly denied, these access to records and meetings won't have the financial or emotional resources that it takes to actually go into court and win these battles that result in access to these records and meetings that's supposed to be guaranteed under state law.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a war of attrition in a way, just wear people down.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And well, in the case that we're going to talk about today is a perfect example of that.
Right. Now, Aaron, this story begins 10 years ago when you were still in law school and you were researching drug task forces. And these are task forces that are made up of different law enforcement departments that work together in larger regions. And at that time, you'd made a number of Sunshine requests. What is it that you were hoping to discover?
There were a couple of things that I was hoping to find out. I actually discovered the existence of these multi-jurisdictional drug task forces by accident on the way to a public town hall event where there was a license and registration checkpoint at the highway exit for the venue. When we asked who was conducting it, we found out it was a drug task force. No one really knew what those were. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to figure out what those entities were to begin with. And it turned out they were multi-jurisdictional entities given lump sums of grant money passed through the federal government, through the Department of Public Safety, to the drug task forces. And in more than half of cases, they weren't in compliance with state law requiring them to have an oversight board, meaning they had expanded jurisdiction, expanded funding, and minimal to no oversight.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what then was the initial reaction to your requests?
Initially, he stated that he just wasn't going to provide the records. I had at that point, Dave wrote a letter to him, you know, explaining that this would be a knowing and purposeful violation of the Sunshine Law. He still failed to produce the records. I believe I made three separate requests over the course of a few months, he seemed to think that this was just something that was, he acted as though it was just beneath him, mm-hmm. Him being Mark Richardson, the prosecutor at the time.
Okay. So, I mean, it sounds like you stumbled upon the existence of these multi-jurisdictional drug task forces. How is it that, Dave, you got involved in this effort to get those documents?
That's a great question. So my wife and I founded the Freedom Center of Missouri in 2010, and for the first few years, we focused exclusively on constitutional issues. But we had begun to hear more and more stories from people who were frustrated with an inability to access public records or meetings. And so we had started to discuss getting into government transparency, making that part of our organization's mission. And it just so happened Aaron called us at just the right time. And he mentioned that he had submitted requests to about a dozen of these task forces and was getting stonewalled entirely by some of them. A couple of them even tried to deny that they existed at all. And it really piqued our interest, and we thought, this is a perfect example of why government transparency is crucial. And they therefore would make excellent test cases for our entry into the field of government transparency litigation. Mm-hmm. And so we litigated, I believe, about a half dozen cases on Aaron's behalf. And at the end of several years of effort on that front, we did firmly establish that these multi-jurisdictional drug task forces are indeed subject to Missouri Sunshine Law. But then, especially with the Cole County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, we found that securing compliance, even after winning those victories in court, wasn't always an easy task.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this underscores two points. One is that in order to even, be able to bring a case like this, you have to have a public interest law firm that's willing to take your case and litigate it for a decade on the hope that they'll be awarded attorney's fees. And so for that, I'm eternally grateful to Dave and the Freedom Center. But that means that most people don't have access to the litigation necessary to actually pursue the records when they get stonewalled. Most people don't have that access.
Mm-hmm.
And second, while we might have a really good law on paper, this underscores some of the issues with the enforcement. Again, most people don't have access to a lawyer who's willing to litigate these cases for decades.
Mm-hmm. So you and Aaron, you and Dave working together, and finally in 2017, you had a major victory, and this was in Cole County, which includes Jefferson City, and a judge there had ruled in your favor and awarded you $12,000 in damages. Now, the judge stated that Cole County Prosecuting Attorney Mark Richardson, you mentioned earlier, Aaron, that Richardson had knowingly and purposely violated the state's open record laws. Now, at that time, it was the largest ever penalty for violating the state's Sunshine Law. Dave, what was it that that victory represented?
It was monumental. And let me be clear. I want to make sure that we give due credit to the ACLU of Missouri, who actually partnered with us on this case at the early stages. And what made the difference as far as getting that finding that there was a purposeful violation is, in a deposition with the former prosecuting attorney, Mark Richardson, he acknowledged that he had actually taught courses to other government officials on how to respond to Sunshine Law requests. And so, whereas many public officials could at least plausibly claim ignorance about what the law required, when the judge heard that, by his own admission, he had been teaching other government officials how to respond, he could not plausibly claim ignorance of what the law required anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when Judge Joyce really kind of dropped the hammer on him and awarded this very large civil penalty award. And then the challenge from that point forward was convincing the courts to then enforce the part of the judgment that said he now has to search for and produce the records.
Mm-hmm. That victory was a pretty big moment for you, right, Aaron?
Yeah. We were thrilled. It meant Dave got his attorney's fees at least through 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It meant, in theory, we were going to get everything that we wanted. There were certain records we were seeking related to communication between the local drug task force in that area, Mustang, and the Cole County's prosecuting attorney, based on information that we received about some potentially unethical enforcement activities.
Mm-hmm.
A decade later, we don't know if those activities are still going on. We still haven't received those records. And so it was a huge moment at the time. But the records and public access to the records has still effectively been stonewalled for, now a full decade, to the point where the people who were, potentially taking actions that, in theory, somebody might need to be held accountable for, mm-hmm. are no longer in power and are no longer around.
What kinds of actions are we talking about?
So specifically, we were interested in enforcement actions that were taking place in public housing projects in Jefferson City, and the enforcement that the Mustang Drug Task Force was doing at those public housing projects. I received some information regarding some potentially unethical enforcement practices, and we were looking to prove or disprove those that tip by obtaining public records. And to this date, we don't have them.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today about Missouri's Sunshine Law with Aaron Malin and attorney Dave Rowland. They spent 10 years fighting in court for the release of records about the state's drug task forces. Dave, you have worked on a lot of Sunshine cases. What has made this one particularly difficult?
The obstinance when it came to actually doing the search. One of the crazy things is after the Missouri Court of Appeals affirmed the ruling in our favor in 2019, this was our first trip to the Court of Appeals, the attorney that that came to represent the prosecuting attorney's office in the wake of that ruling took the position that all they were really required to do was to pay the civil penalties and pay the attorney's fees, that they did not actually have to search for and produce the records themselves. So the next round of litigation dealt with, did they actually have to conduct this search and produce the records? It was only in 2023 that after our third trip to the Court of Appeals, we got a definitive answer saying, yes, in fact, you have to conduct this search. You have to produce all of the responsive records. So what we've been wrestling with for the last year and a half is trying to get the local circuit court to hold their feet to the fire. In July of last year, the circuit court not only affirmed, yes, you have to search for and produce the records, it said, here's how you have to do it. It told them they had to keep a log that was designed to inform both the court and Aaron about which sets of records they have searched, the approximate number of records that have been searched, and then which responsive records, if any, have been located that had not already been provided to Aaron. They were then ordered to report not later than or less frequently than the end of each month with these updates about their progress. It's been 8 months since the court issued that specific order saying you've got to report by the end of each month, and only in two of those months did they make any serious effort to comply, and even then, they did not do specifically what the court had ordered them to do mm-hmm. in terms of updating their progress. And that's why this last week we had to file our motion for civil contempt. It is absolutely clear they have not been complying with the court's order. Now the question is, will the court actually hold them to account? And I'll tell you, local judges, especially in counties where they're elected as opposed to appointed, they can sometimes be a little bit nervous about holding other elected officials in contempt. They can sometimes be concerned about issuing fee awards because ultimately it's the taxpayers that have to pay those awards, not the officials themselves. And so judges can be a little bit apprehensive about that, but I'm hopeful that Judge Green is going to look at this situation. It's going to be clear that the prosecuting attorney is just openly defying the court's order, and it's time to actually hold them to account for that.
Mm-hmm. Dave, can the court compel the government to release this information to you? I mean, does it have some way to enforce that?
So in theory, it already has.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing that's so bizarre about this is the court has now repeatedly said you have to search for and produce the records. And the courts do have a few tools in their disposal. They can issue fees. So that's like a monetary penalty that's designed to incentivize quick compliance with the court's order. And so what we have asked the court to do here is to award a $50 per day fee so that hopefully they'll say, well, if we don't get this done quickly, that fee is really going to add up. We need to get this taken care of. That's our hope. If a financial penalty ends up not adequately incentivizing compliance, it is at least theoretically possible that the court could order a responsible official to go to jail for a period of time. Mm-hmm. That is extremely unusual. I don't think it's likely to happen where a prosecuting attorney is involved, but that is the kind of tool that a court has in its toolbox to ensure compliance in most cases. Mm-hmm.
I think it also speaks to the lengths that they're willing to go to try to conceal, the information that was requested. I mean, mm-hmm. fighting this for a decade, 3 trips to the Court of Appeals. They then sought and they filed an application for transfer to the Missouri Supreme Court, which was rejected. I mean, the amount of money that they must have spent just on their own side defending this case is absurd. And again, it's regrettable that it comes out of the taxpayer's pocket and not out of the prosecutor's pocket. Mm-hmm. But yeah, on top of that, of course, a civil penalty and attorney's fees also, regrettably come from the taxpayer and not from the office of the prosecutor.
Right. Now, the hearing on this motion to contempt is 1 week from today. What is it that you are asking the court to do, Aaron?
We're mainly asking them to force the prosecutor's office to turn over the records that they were ordered to turn over in 2019, 2021, 2023, again last year. I mean, just over and over and over again. The bottom line is, they're not going to be able to. There's no amount of money that they could pay to get out of providing the records. They might think that paying the legal fees again might be a way to just, kick the can down the road. But eventually they're going to have to provide the actual documents. And whatever they contain, they are going to extreme lengths to avoid making it public.
Mm-hmm. This legal fight has not been short. It's not been cheap either. So, 10 years into this process, Dave, what is it that has kept you going on this?
Well, part of the reason that my wife and I started the Freedom Center of Missouri was because we have a very deep commitment to constitutional, limited, and accountable government. And so, it's a matter of principle for us. Every case that we take on not necessarily from the viewpoint of, we're going to get rich on this, but rather we want to make sure that government is functioning properly and that it's held accountable to the people. And so this is part of our broader mission. And so there's a huge amount of satisfaction that comes along with that, even if we don't always get the attorney's fees that might ordinarily go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, I have to stress that, most people don't have an attorney who's going to fight this battle for them for 10 years on the possibility that they might be reimbursed attorney's fees at the end by the violating entity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the existence of these public interest law firms like the Freedom Center is critically important to enforcement of public access to records laws.
Mm-hmm. Now, something that I do want to ask, because it's not just obstacles in court orders, Aaron, that in some cases you had difficulty confirming that these drug task forces even existed. I mean, are they still claiming they don't exist?
They're having a harder time doing that now because so many officials had been deposed as a result of the 6 or 8 lawsuits that we filed against the drug task forces that did exist. But St. Louis City and St. Louis County are great examples. St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department, their drug task force denied their existence. The actual person, the attorney who signed the grant paperwork accepting $250,000 a year in grant funding, who was the one that actually responded to my Sunshine request and denied the existence of the task force. Obviously, he's now been deposed, and we've proven the existence of the task force mm-hmm. through other means. But in St. Louis County, their task force, they're supposed to have a board of directors to oversee the task force that has meetings. I requested their meeting minutes. They fabricated the meeting minutes after the fact. And the metadata showed that they created the minutes the day after I submitted the request, which means, in essence, nobody was overseeing this $250,000 a year entity, which, mm-hmm. again, had expanded jurisdiction, expanded power, and no oversight.
Yeah. In our last 45...
Blaine, if I could follow up on that
real
quick.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
So the St. Louis City situation was even more bizarre. We ended up winning a judgment in the St. Louis City Circuit Court against the drug task force there. And again, it shows the challenge of enforcing the Sunshine Law. We won on every count except for the knowing and purposeful violation, even though the court acknowledged that the guy who denied the existence of the task force was the very attorney who was signing the grant requests and the grant documents for that task force. The court ended up saying we did not get attorney's fees because he did not think that that attorney was a reasonable person. So we won everything possible in that case, except for actually getting the attorney's fees in that case.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll look forward to hearing what happens with this hearing that's coming up. Dave Rowland is Director of Litigation for the Freedom, for the Missouri Freedom Center. And Aaron Malin is a legal consultant for Pedroli Law. Aaron and Dave, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.